Our master taught no mere theory, doctrine, or belief. It was the divine principle of all real being which he taught and practiced. His proof of Christianity was no form or system of religion and worship, but Christian Science working out the harmony of life and love. Jesus sent a message to John the Baptist, which was intended to prove beyond a question that the Christ had come. Go your way and tell John what things ye have seen and heard. How that the blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, to the poor the gospel is preached. In other words, tell John what the demonstration of divine power is, and he will at once perceive that God is the power in the messianic work. That life is God, Jesus proved by his reappearance after the crucifixion in strict accordance with his scientific statement. Destroy this temple, body, and in 3 days I, Spirit, will raise it up. It is as if he had said, the I, the life, substance, and intelligence of the universe, is not in matter to be destroyed. Jesus' parables explain life as never mingling with sin and death. He laid the axe of science at the root of material knowledge, that it might be ready to cut down the false doctrine of pantheism, that God or life is in or of matter. Jesus sent forth 70 students at one time, but only 11 left a desirable historic record. Tradition credits him with 200 or 300 other disciples who have left no name. Many are called, but few are chosen. They fell away from grace because they never truly understood their master's instructions. Why do those who profess to follow Christ reject the essential religion he came to establish? Jesus' persecutors made their strongest attack upon this very point. They endeavored to hold him at the mercy of matter and to kill him according to certain assumed material laws. The Pharisees claimed to know and to teach the divine will, but they only hindered the success of Jesus' mission. Even many of his students stood in his way. If the master had not taken a student and taught the unseen verities of God, he would not have been crucified. The determination to hold spirit in the grasp of matter is the persecutor of truth and love. While respecting all that is good in the church or out of it, one's consecration to Christ is more on the ground of demonstration than of profession. In conscience, we cannot hold to beliefs outgrown. And by understanding more of the divine principle of the deathless Christ, we are enabled to heal the sick and to triumph over sin. Neither the origin, the character, nor the work of Jesus was generally understood. Not a single component part of his nature did the material world measure aright. Even his righteousness and purity did not hinder men from saying, he is a glutton and a friend of the impure, and Beelzebub is his patron. Remember, thou Christian martyr, It is enough if thou art found worthy to unloose the sandals of thy master's feet. To suppose that persecution for righteousness' sake belongs to the past, and that Christianity today is at peace with the world because it is honored by sects and societies, is to mistake the very nature of religion. Error repeats itself. The trials encountered by prophet, disciple, and apostle, of whom the world was not worthy, await in some form every pioneer of truth. There is too much animal courage in society and not sufficient moral courage. Christians must take up arms against error at home and abroad. They must grapple with sin in themselves and in others and continue this warfare until they have finished their course. If they keep the faith, they will have the crown of rejoicing. Christian experience teaches faith in the right and disbelief in the wrong. It bids us work the more earnestly in times of persecution, because then our labor is more needed. Great is the reward of self-sacrifice, though we may never receive it in this world.